Welcome to Polo De Marca, the luxury living and lifestyle magazine where the true essence is in its detail.
The first question is, can you tell me about your journey and the passion for aviation, and how did you become a pilot and a visionary?
It's a long story if you want to get into every nook and cranny, but the gist of it was my dad is a pilot. He is a private pilot, eventually got a commercial instrument certificate. He didn't do it for a living, but he wanted to kind of pass along his passion of aviation. So he got me involved with building and flying model airplanes from a very young age, like 3 or 4 years old. I was building model airplanes. And then when I was about 6 or 7 years old, dad took us to Oshkosh, which is the Air Venture Air Show, the largest air show in the world by many measures. And to get to see pilots like Charlie Hillard and Art Scholl, Leo Longsager flying at that air show, it gave me this sense of, you know, up to then I was building a pile of little model airplanes. But to see somebody sitting in an airplane and watching it do these same things I was doing with a model airplane, it blew me away. I mean, just that feeling, like I didn't even know that was possible. I mean, I see the airplanes flying over, but to be able to do that kind of stuff, it didn't register that it was possible up until that point. And when I saw it, it's like, now I know. This is me for the rest of my life. This is what I want to do.
How did you and Del Coller pioneer the creation and assemble the Yak 110, a hybrid triple engine aircraft using a spare jet engine and 2 planes?
Well, again, that's another long story. But what's cool about this is I didn't know Del. The Yak 110 was an idea that I had in about 2009, because I saw my Yak, the red side, sitting at an aerobatic contest next to another Yak 55. And from where I was standing, it looked like one airplane. It was 2 separate airplanes. I went, oh, I've got an idea. Because the red airplane I bought in 2004. The blue airplane was also an airplane I flew in 2004 for the first time, getting ready for the World Championships in Sweden. So fast forward to me then buying a red airplane, having flown the blue one. The guy that owned the blue airplane, Chad Barty, subsequently sold his airplane, and he hired a ferry pilot to go and take it to the new pilot, the new owner, and that was Del Coller. This was, again, long before I knew Del. But he was instrumental in that airplane, the blue airplane. And then fast forward to the days when I was working for John Klatt, and I got this opportunity to fly a jet-powered biplane. So imagine, you know, I've got the Yak 110 with a jet, but the biplane now, it's a 1930s vintage biplane with a jet engine on the bottom of it. And Del was then the guy that was hired to build that airplane. That's how I got to meet Del. And then through our work on the WACO project, I told Del, I'm like, hey, you know, I have this other idea for a jet airplane. I want to take my old Yak 55 and match it up to Chad's old Yak 55 and then put a jet engine on it. He's like, well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's what we should be doing. But of course, we didn't have the money to make it happen. We were trying to do it with John Klatt. That didn't really work out. And so ultimately, I called Chad Barty and I said, hey, Chad, man, I want to take your old airplane and my Yak 55. I want to combine it together to make one airplane, then stick a jet engine on it. What do you think? Because I was looking for someone that might want to help out, you know, put this thing together. He says, you're out of your mind. And so he's like, well, I said, just why don't you sleep on it? And I think what happened is he went to the bar with his buddies, the Fat Tire Cowboy guys, and they talked about it that night. He called me later that night and said, man, I'm 100% in. Let's do this. And it was less than a month from that phone call until we had both airplanes at Del's shop ready to be put together. And from that point, it was only 13 months until it flew for the first time.
No way.
So once we had the backing and we had this opportunity, we went for it right away and made it happen. A lot of people say, well, it must have been a pretty wild night at the bar, right? To come up with an idea. And we like to say it was years of beers.
Yeah.
And this was a long process. Del and I worked together for 3 years before we got to bring the two Yak 55s together.
Nice. Concerning the Yak historical reputation in dogfighting, how do you think the Yak 110 would fare in a hypothetical war situation?
It's a kind of a cool question in a lot of ways, because for one, I mean, we're finding the Yak 55 by itself is a single-seat, single-engine airplane designed by the Yakovlev Design Bureau, which is a military organization in Russia, to have an airplane that would compete at world-level aerobatic competitions. So it was never designed to be a dogfighting airplane, but people knew in the military were flying this airplane and they were using it to fly in competition. But the cool thing about the Yakovlev Design Bureau, it's kind of like having Boeing designing an aerobatic airplane. And the engineer that came on board to help us build that center section for the Yak-110, when he first came to look at the Yak-55, he said, wow, they have set the standard at a very high standard for me to match when I'm designing this center section to have an equivalent safety of an airplane that was designed by a very large company. So the Yak is overbuilt in a lot of ways because the engineering was done by a big military company. So dogfighting, it didn't ever do, but the Yak-110, I bet, would hold its own with some airplanes, because I mean, I can hover and then I can accelerate going straight up, and when I can go really slow, I can go from zero speed to 250 miles an hour, just like that. So,
wow.
But I don't think we're going to be fastening any guns onto the airplane.
Would you?
I would love to. Don't put any ideas in my head.
Exactly. You never know. We've got more trick coming up. You never know.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right? So the Yak-110 is widely recognized for its aerobatic abilities and your championship titles. What are the restrictions of the aircraft, and what are some of the best performances that you did?
The limitation of the airplane, so when you have a Yak-55, it was plus 9 Gs and minus 6 Gs. This airplane, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit bigger and heavier. So the engineer has moved those G limits down a little bit, but it's still almost 8 positive Gs, and the configuration is Yak-110. And minus about 5 Gs. So, and I never come close to one of those limits with the airplane because it's having so much power. I have 6,000 pounds of thrust on an airplane with me in it, ready for the air show, weighs 4,800 pounds. So I've got all the power that you could possibly want. And what's cool about it is I do stuff that other airplanes can't. Like I hover the airplane right there, show center, and then accelerate going straight up. Not even the F-22 can do that.
Exactly.
So, as an aerobatic airplane, it's very capable. I do vertical snap rolls. I do spins, upright inverted spins, and double hammerheads. And, I mean, anything any other aerobatic airplane can do, we can do with the F-110. However, we stretch the envelope to other things that they can't.
Yeah.
Because we have differential power. So I can pull the power back to idle on one engine and full power on the other, which makes it spin ultra fast. I also have the extra 3,000 pounds from the jet engine. So like I said, I can go to hover like a helicopter and then just climb straight up from there.
Wow.
Really, really amazing. So it's capable in so many different ways. Unlike even when I flew the Waka with a jet engine, that airplane didn't have the differential thrust like I have now. If you ever thought of, for the pilots out there thinking about flying a light twin engine airplane, you would never just grab one power and pull it all the way to idle. The airplanes aren't designed to do that. And so when I tell that to actual pilots, I'm like, yeah, well, I just rip one power idle and spin it around like this and then fly out of that. And it blows their mind. And most of the people watching that aren't pilots, they're blown away just knowing that it's like, well, is a pilot sit down that side? Is there two pilots? Is there a pilot over here?
With, absolutely.
I mean, how are they controlling the rocket, they call it, the jet engine? And so it leads a lot of questions for even the pilots in the audience.
Yeah. And so,
how is this possible?
So what's the response from other pilots, seeing the plane and then seeing the longevity of it, like in terms of the plane itself and the maneuverability?
It was funny when we first had the idea to bring it to the air show circuit. Most of my colleagues in the air show world thought, oh, that's cute. You got a nice little novelty item. And when we first showed a picture of the airplane flying, they just figured it was a Photoshop that wasn't real. It's just a Photoshop airplane. They weren't believers. I told them, I said, it's going to be awesome. There's nothing like it. It's first time in the history of aviation that two airplanes have been put together and had a jet engine. It's never been done before. First and only. And so people are naysayers. They're like, oh, yeah, whatever. That's going to be, we're going to see Jeff flying around in these little circles with this novelty item. And then I put the jet engine on it. And I flew it, and I showed these pictures of the airplane flying upside down. And again, the pilot's like, I don't know, this might not be very safe. what is he trying to do? So actually, to get our first air show was a very big deal, because when you have an air show, they want, I mean, safety is number one, right? I mean, absolutely, safety is number one priority. And here you come with an airplane, never been done before. No one's ever seen it. You put two airplanes, you know, jet engine, they're like, no, we don't want to have anything to do with
absolutely.
You. And so it was a really big deal, actually, to get our first air show. And once we did, and we flew it, and I wanted to make a point to everyone. So the very first figure I did at any air show in the public, where I took off, and I rolled the airplane immediately to inverted, and then circled around in a vertical up to a very fast spin. I'm going to put all the naysayers to rest. I'm going to show them that this airplane is very capable, and it's a fully unlimited aerobatic airplane. And from there, we've been just skyrocket. They, you know, after that weekend, we got calls like, hey, can you come to our show? The show 2 weeks after that, like, hey, we need to have you at our show. We got all these comments from your airplane, and it just went off from there.
Hope you got paid for it, though.
We didn't at the first show. Actually, we paid them to be there.
No way.
Yeah, because they weren't going to have anything to do with it. That's what it took. We had to pay them to be there.
And that's why you're such a visionary in so many different ways. You know, like, you're kind of beating the whole system of like, oh, you're not going to make nothing in yourself. And then here you go, you prove it. Like, done deal kind of thing. It's amazing.
I think that's why Kevin and I get along so well, because we just think a little bit different, you know, with the airplane, with he's just going like crazy with this stuff at Gold Coast. I mean, who would have guessed, right? Awesome. It's just so cool to be part of.
And leading up to this next question also, for the upcoming Pacific Air Show 2023 on the Gold Coast, what can attendees expect and what tricks will you perform during the show?
Well, what they expect is something like they've seen all of the time. You see, we call them flip-flops, right? The little civilian airplanes that come in, and they all look pretty much the same. One might be red and one might be blue. They're trailing some smoke and they make a little bit of noise. What they don't expect is to see two airplanes together that look like one. So first they go, is it a formation team? Is that one airplane? Is there props? Is there jets? When you first hear the jet, I see when I watch the videos from the crowd, they start looking around for the other airplane. Because here's an airplane with props, all of a sudden making jet noise, they start looking for something else. They're like, okay, where's the other airplane in this act? Where's the jet noise coming from? And it's not long after I start flying where then I go to hover and they start realizing, it's like, holy cow, that airplane has a jet engine on it. And he's hovering. And now they're like, well, what size does he sit on? Is there two pilots in there? Is there one pilot? I'm on the left side, but I call it the red side, because if I'm here or if I'm there, it's easy to tell people, look at the red side, because that's where I'm sitting. Versus blue side.
Right. Oh my God, that's crazy. The next question is, as a full-time captain of Delta Airlines, how often do you get the chance of flying the Yak 110? And have you ever considered performing tricks with the Airbus 230 that you fly?
Well, Airbus was smart enough to put all kinds of safety elements into the controls that are playing. Like, even if I wanted to roll an Airbus 320, it would get to this point and stop. It does not allow you to do it. So probably a good thing. But I mean, I certainly wouldn't ever attempt anything like that. But
have you ever tried?
Not in that airplane. I did early on in a 737 simulator in a safe environment, in a training environment. I did roll a 737. I mean, it's just an airplane. It's got ailerons. I mean, you can fly the even an airplane like that. I mean, there's been famous pilots that have rolled a 707. I mean, it's been done. But yeah, it's interesting, because people a lot of times are like, well, I mean, how do you go from that airplane to this airplane? And from my competition aerobatics, I fly an extra 330 SC, which only has one engine, one seat, also very capable, but it's completely different discipline than air shows or the Airbus. So the translation between each is so far that I don't have an issue going from one airplane to the other. But the back to the first part of the question with Delta, I mean, I fly a full-time schedule at Delta. Last year, I flew 10 air shows around the country in the U.S. And so I have to strategically plan my vacations and, you know, my time off to have the time from Delta so I can go do this. this year for me was actually a little bit easier because in order to get the airplane here, we wanted to make sure it got here. And that means you have to start disassembling it back in, I think we started disassembling in March to make sure it was on a boat in April, to make sure it was here in time to get assembled and flown and tested. I mean, Ben was here just last week, got it flown for the first time on Saturday. So this process started in March to
wow.
get it here to fly on Saturday. So it was a very big deal to go East Coast, Ben Anderson took it apart, put it in two different containers, then it trucked up to Philadelphia, then got on a ship all the way through the Panama Canal and to New Zealand, then up to Brisbane. It was a big deal to get their plane here. So for me, I've been working more at Delta this year than I have for a very long time because I have not had this full schedule of air shows going
on. Yeah, absolutely. So, like next is your, like the Huntington Beach as well, too, actually.
Well, I have the U.S. National Aerobatic Championships coming up in September for team selection. So I'm going to go try out for that. And it doesn't look like we're going to get the Yak-110, unfortunately, to Huntington Beach this year, which is kind of sad because it's the first time since the Yak has been flying that it won't be at Huntington Beach. So it will be sorely missed there. But
and like, are there any upcoming like shows that you'll be doing as well too this year?
Nope, this is it. Unless something comes up where I fly something else at Huntington Beach, but that doesn't look likely at the moment. So I'll do this, and then I've got the Nationals to go to the next World Championships.
Perfect. How has the Yak-110 been received by both by the aviation community and the general public?
I think it's getting a great review from, I mean, today I flew from Archer Field down along the beach. Some
yes.
people saw that, see that, and then I landed over at Southport Airport. And when I landed, I mean, there was at least 50 people there. It wasn't an announcement that I was coming, but obviously word spread when I told Steve and some of the guys, that's like, I'm going to show up here in a little bit. Word spread pretty quickly because they're hungry to see this amazing airplane, right? So bunch of them gathered around the airport. It was cool. You know, I always like to show up and there's a bunch of people there because it's so unique. And I find that a lot of times when I fly an airplane cross country, like I went into, I'll give you an example, Idaho Falls, Idaho, on our first journey to AirVenture. And the runway's here and there's a road right across the end of the runway. And I was making my approach like this and making a landing. And I thought I was going to cause a crash on the highway because everyone came to a stop to watch this airplane. And then as I was taxiing out the runway, I saw them all turning around and coming at the airport. Next thing you know, there was 75, 100 people there at the airport. And everyone's calling everybody. By the time I got fuel, the airport is run over by all these people that just had to come out and see this most strange airplane. So not only industry air shows, people that know nothing about airplanes know that there's something different about this airplane. It doesn't matter if you're 7 years old or 7 years old, when you see it for the first time, it's different. You know immediately that it's different. One of the cool things I see, and I love the blue and the red paint job initially, at least because I wanted everyone to realize that it was two airplanes that was put together. Because if you painted all one color, it would look like more like a P-38 or just like one airplane. I wanted it to distinctly look like two different airplanes. So that was a good call because people really liked that it was two different colors because it was easy to see that, yes, there was a red airplane, a blue airplane, and we put them together.
That's, like, to be honest, that story that you just told is really phenomenal, like, to hear even, and it's not even seen in the world really before.
Right.
Like, to be very frank with you, like, for your advancements in terms of being like a visionary and being an advocate in the aviation industry, it's like really amazing, to be honest.
Yeah, well, thank you. My wife would say, yeah, she humbles me all the time. She's like, oh,
so what did she say?
You're not a big deal. Don't let that go to your head. But I do understand the gravity of what this opportunity, because I mean, maybe I've been pretty successful in my entire aviation career. I've been very fortunate to have friends and family that have supported me to a very high level and to help me get to where I am now. But what is cool is, like I said earlier, it's my opportunity now that I give back. I'm a pretty humble person, you know, and I have no problem talking to young people about how to make this a career or how to get involved with aviation, whether it's, I mean, even if it's air traffic controller or a pilot or a mechanic, whatever. And we need all these people, and flying airshow airplanes isn't for everybody. We have a very small community of pilots that fly airshow airplanes. So that's not for everyone. But if I can get somebody into the cockpit of an Airbus through my passion of flying, then it's a success, right? I've done what this whole project is to start with. You have this dream, and then you want someone else to have that same dream. And this is the opportunity that I have by flying an airplane like this.
Because that's a really good point that you actually mentioned as well, too, in terms of education of people. You know, like, and I think for you to, like, just to kind of really infuse, you know, the passion of the divide, your plane, your passion as a pilot, that kind of thing would actually, people will actually see that in general, you know, whether it be heard to the podcast or whether it be seen,
right,
like visually. And I think that's a great way to kind of really infuse that, you know, for young enthusiasts as well, too. So
right,
it's great that what you're doing as well, too.
Thank you.
So in terms of the next question, are there any future plans for advancements or modifications to the 110?
There are a few things in the work. In fact, one of them you might get to see this week that has never been seen before. This is a new program we're trying to, I'm not going to give you any clues right now. It's either going to be there or won't, and you'll know when it is. But after that, I mean, I do have something special planned that I have never done. It's got to do with how many engines are running at some particular time in the air show. So there's a couple of tricks. I'm trying to do a tribute to Bob Hoover. Of course, one of my most, from a young person, I mean, he left such a mark. I mean, he's such a pilot's pilot, such a gentleman. I mean, I just loved seeing him every single time he was available to watch. And yeah, so for me to come here, and I know the Australian people love Bob Hoover also, and I really want to do something to tribute to Bob Hoover and Sersha. So I think it's going to be ready for this year. If not, it'll be there for next year. But that's one thing. I'm also working on some night show stuff that I want to do with their plane. And we're, I mean, imagine this, their plane hovering at night during the show, and all of a sudden a 100-foot flame comes out the back of the afterburner on the jet engine.
Oh my God.
Okay. That is something that I've dreamed about since day one. I've got artist renderings from 2016
no.
with a large flame coming out of the back of the airplane.
Oh
and not
God.
Because it's on fire, but because there's an afterburner flame coming out
during
the night show. So that's something their plane continues to give and give. I'm really only scratching the surface of what I can do in this airplane. There's so many different aerobatic maneuvers and things that
you haven't even tried out?
Haven't even tried it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, literally, the airplane just flying around, like you saw it on the beach, just that is impressive. It's an airplane that looks totally strange, making a lot of noise. It's impressive. And then you start doing some of that stuff and flying it upside down and spinning at a very fast rate. It really shows well. Also, from an airshow airplane standpoint, it's big. It's 39-foot wingspan. And it's got two smoke trails coming out of each engine. And makes a lot of noise. It's got all those air show ingredients. It's big, makes a lot of noise, makes a lot of smoke.
Because one of the questions that one of our viewers was saying is like, how close to the ocean will you be on Saturday?
They get us down to the surface.
Okay.
And so we fly their planes down to the surface. It's a little bit more challenging to understand your depth above water than it is above a runway, for example. So I give myself a little bit more leeway here, but with the waves of the ocean and the beach and the markers that are there, I mean, I can usually get, you know, within 15, 20 feet. If I get any lower than that, I'll hear it from my wife. She's like, what are you doing? I mean, perfectly safe. But I mean, it does, it's fun. I mean, realistically, unless you're right at the front row, you don't get to see an airplane when it's down that low. So, I mean, I touch down that low a little bit just because it's more fun. It's probably more selfish to do that. But for the most part, I'm flying a little bit higher so that even the people in the back can see the airplane just as well.
Absolutely. One of my last question is, in your bio, your last name is Bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
It's pronounced like a whiskey. May I ask what brand of whiskey you should finish a drink?
I think the one I have at home right now is Woodruff. Reserve, but you know, you would think that I'd be a very big connoisseur of bourbon with that last name. However, it's only been in the last couple of years that I started having like an old fashioned. That's my drink of choice if I'm going to have bourbon, is an old fashioned. And you know, Angel's Envy or a Woodruff or I'm not set on one yet because I'm still pretty new at tasting them. But I was more of a vodka person before that.
No way! What kind of vodka did you drink?
Well, now it's a Tito's. When I drink vodka, it's pretty much a Tito's drink.
Wow! And lastly, like, what would be your message to the Gold Coast public and to Australia?
I would say be sure to come to the Gold Coast next weekend, 18, 19, 20. You're gonna see something that's never been seen here. If you come for no other reason, I mean, just know how much work the Code 4, Kevin Elliott, and all those people have done to put this on. It's a big deal. And to come out here and have the air show that he has put together in a short period of time, including the Yak 110. I mean, I'm going to be selfish, like, yeah, come out and see the Yak 110 because it is the most unique thing you're going to see next week by a long ways. And it's worth coming out to see it.
Well, thank you again for our interview to the Pollard Market Podcast.